Welcome to the Income 180 System, Module 9, How to Increase Sales by Recognizing Your Prospect's Buying Style.
Sales is something, in my opinion, everybody does and everybody's in, whether you actually officially call yourself a salesperson or not. Everyone makes their living by selling something, even if it's their time, their knowledge, their physical labor. It doesn't matter. We all sell something. So I thought this was information that everyone could use. You should have the form that will help you take notes for this teleclass. If you don't have the form, that's fine. It just makes it a little easier to follow along, but hopefully you have some paper and pen handy to take notes. So let's get started with the topic, how to increase sales by understanding your prospects. Like I said, I think all of us are pretty much selling ourselves every day. I heard someone once say that if you've ever had a second date, then you know how to sell. So we're all in the business of persuasion and convincing and influencing others. And so this call will be helpful whether or not you're a salesperson or a business owner or just someone who wants to be able to influence others better. My story starts years ago with sales when I started my own business. And no one told me, or I didn't figure it out, that by going into my business, I was, in essence, becoming a salesperson. I, for some reason, thought that I could sign that, you know, I was going to be doing consulting and coaching and that people would just line up at the door. And for those of you in business, you know that's not how it works, and it's kind of a rude awakening that you realize no matter what type of business you're in, you actually have to sell. So I will freely admit that I was really bad at selling for the first few years in my business. A lot of stress around it. I remember getting very worked up before a sales call and not enjoying it very much. But then there were some things that I learned, mostly through trial and error and making mistakes and then correcting. I got some valuable information from other people. I read a lot of books, you know, The Accidental Salesperson, Selling and Persuasion, and figured some things out on my own, but mostly it was by crashing and burning. So the first thing I want to share with you is what I call 5 and 5, the 5 secrets that I've learned about sales in the past 5 years. So number one, the one thing I learned, and I'm so glad I learned this and wish I'd known it at the beginning, is that sales is just a conversation. It's a conversation to help you discover your prospect's need and to see if your solution lines up with what they need. I had it somehow in my head, probably from past programming, that sales was some sort of manipulation, that I had to use some sort of, you know, sales tactics or shady ways of dealing with people in order to close the deal. And what I found out was it was really just a matter of building rapport. And actually, I'm just going to mute that chime that rings on and off. So welcome to whoever just joined the call. So once I realized this, that sales was really just a conversation, it was about building rapport, I became a lot calmer in the sales process. I actually now look forward to sales calls. In my opinion, it's now a matter of, can I help this person out? If I can, great. If not, I might be able to actually refer someone who can. But I don't feel that same anxiety that I used to feel around sales calls. And I read a quote that I really liked. It said, don't think of it as closing a sale. Think of it as opening a relationship. So being the people-oriented type of person I am, I actually do look forward to sales calls now because to me it's just an opportunity to meet someone new, and there's not that pressure there. The second thing that I've learned about sales is that if you're coming from a scarcity mindset, it's much harder to close the sale. So, again, if you're coming from a scarcity mindset, much harder to close the sale. What I mean by this is if you think back to when maybe you were dating. If you're not dating now, think back to a time when you were dating. I love dating and relationship analogies. And that person who needed to get a date, like that person who really, really needed to be in a relationship, that person was generally known by everyone, but also generally avoided by everyone. because just that neediness that they projected, that desperation that they projected, made them very unattractive. It's the same, it's the exact same thing in sales. If you're coming from that place of scarcity, that neediness, you know, you're either coming from need or of greed, but you need to close that sale, the energy that you bring to the table is not attractive, and it can actually backfire on you. It's better to come from what's called an abundance mentality, because then you end up projecting confidence. The energy that you bring to that call is going to be much different when you're going to be coming from a place of having plenty of work. The question is, so if I don't have plenty of work, how do I project this confidence or this abundance? And I say fake it till you make it. Tell yourself that you don't need this business, that, you know, you'll take it if it works for both of you. I had to tell myself that a couple times. But what I did do is one meeting I went into, I was brought in by a mutual contact into a sales call, and I was calling on the CEO of a company. And I had some business. I didn't have a ton of business. I would have liked more, but I wasn't starving. And I didn't particularly care for this CEO. He was pretty, let me think of the right word. He was being difficult, let's say, in the sales process. And he was basically telling me all the reasons that he didn't need my products and services. And I basically got fed up. And I said, at the end of the call, I said, well, you know what? It doesn't sound like you need what I have, and I don't think it's the right time for us to do business together. And immediately he says, well, wait a second. I thought you had some fancy, you know, hiring process that you wanted to sell me. And I said, well, I do have a great hiring process, but you clearly don't need it. You already told me you don't do a lot of hiring and that you think your managers do a good job of hiring, so you don't need it. He actually set up a meeting between me and his HR manager to talk about the hiring process that he didn't need. And right then I saw so clearly that because I had the confidence to take it away, you know, it was almost like watching a child, and all of a sudden now he wanted it. Because I wasn't trying to push anything on him, he really wanted it. So that was a lesson I've always kept in mind. So, again, coming from a scarcity mindset doesn't work well in sales. Number three that I've learned more recently, and this is probably a marketing and a sales lesson or secret, is that facts don't sell. So for all you data pushers out there, or people that really are into your information and the features and the, you know, benefits of your product or service, facts don't tend to sell people. What sells people is when you reach their emotions. If you think about the reason you buy things when you buy them, it's not always because it's got the most research or the most bulleted, you know, list of benefits or all this information to back up your decision. Sometimes it's just an emotional, something appealed to you emotionally. And if you can figure out what the emotional trigger is behind what you sell, behind your product and service, you can convey that to your prospect. I think everybody wants to be, you know, some version of happy, powerful, sexy. And if you can get from the features of your product to the benefits of your product and how those benefits will accomplish those things, make them happy, more powerful, more sexy, you will have people buying from you and not even asking for the details, quite honestly. So, again, facts don't sell. Emotion sells. Number four, this is a mistake I made several times. I didn't find out enough about my prospect and about their situation in the discovery process. So usually in my type of business, you get one sales call and then you go away and you create a proposal. Well, I wouldn't ask enough questions in the discovery process, and I'd go back to my office to start to write the proposal, and there was nothing worse than getting back and trying to write it and not having the facts and the information that I needed. And then the worst would be having to call the prospect back and clarify, ask some clarifying questions. So take the time to ask the questions you need to ask in the discovery process. What I found is that there's very few people who won't share a lot of information with you when it's about them and their company and their situation. So you can just ask questions until you've got enough information. Another side note is don't expect your proposal to sell your work either if you're in the type of business where you write a proposal. I think I thought that my proposals were so compelling and so persuasive. I felt more persuasive when I would write than when I would speak. So I would have a really brief sales meeting, and then I'd go back and write this really dynamic proposal and submit it. Well, 9 times out of 10, people aren't going to read your proposal cover to cover. So don't expect that your proposal is going to sell your work. Get conceptual agreement in that meeting, in that discovery process, and then just have your proposal be kind of like the formality at the end. And number five, something I've excuse me, something I've written about and something I talk about a lot is, especially with people that are new in business or new to sales, is never lower your price. Now, there's some people that sell things, and just by virtue of what they sell, it's almost like they expect to have to lower it. But what I found in the consulting world is when I would lower my prices, I was then seen as a commodity, and I was always asked to lower my prices. It's an expectation that you create. Interestingly enough, I read a book that by a man named Alan Weiss. It was called, let me look over on my bookshelf, Million Dollar Consulting by Alan Weiss, W-E-I-S-S. And in there he said to never lower your price unless you're taking away value, or unless you just, as a general rule, offer volume discounts. Don't lower your price because someone asked you to. And when I stopped doing that, I was amazed that I didn't lose sales. I have never lost a sale because I refused to lower my price, which may surprise you. And as a matter of fact, this is a great story. A couple of months ago, I got a new, a prospect in Albuquerque, Mexico. Oh, and the person who referred me to them is on the phone, as a matter of fact. So thank you for that referral. I just realized that. And they wanted to use my assessments on three of their salespeople. And they asked for a deal. And what they said was, could we have a deal on these trial assessments? And I thought that was funny that they used the word trial, like as if these assessments weren't really the good stuff. So I wrote back and I said, well, I appreciate that this is the first time that you've used them, but these trial assessments, in quotations, are the full-blown value that my clients get, that new clients and prospects get. So, I wouldn't basically negotiate on the price. And what came back to me was they were actually happy that I didn't lower my price. They were actually proud of me, I think is what they said, for me not lowering my price. Because think about it. In a way, that could have been their way of testing me and testing my value. And if you know your value and you know what you bring to the table, don't lower your prices. Yes, you might lose a sale here and there, but in my experience, that hasn't been the case. And I know I'm providing value, so just stick to your guns with that. Okay, so that's the 5 secrets I've learned in 5 years. So the next thing I want to do is I want to talk about the buying motivation of the 4 styles. So there's people on this call that know DISC very well. There's some people on the call that are certified in DISC. There's people that don't know it, too well, and some that may not know it at all. So I just really quickly want to go through the 4 styles, and I didn't leave room for this on your form, so you might have to flip a page over or take out a blank page or something, just so that you understand the 4 different behavioral factors before we get into their buying motivation and then how to close and sell them. So what DISC is, it's a 4-factor behavioral model measuring behavior on 4 different dimensions. The first D stands for dominance, and that's how you respond to problems and challenges. And the higher dominant person deals with problems and challenges in a very assertive, aggressive, forceful, very direct way. They tend to be very goal-oriented, results-oriented, very decisive. They like action, don't mind conflict or confrontation, and they always like things to be changing. They don't like the status quo. Some of the weaknesses of a high dominant person is that because time is so important to them or results are so important to them, they do tend to be impatient. At times it can be pushy and insensitive to others' needs because they're driving so hard for a result. The emotion behind a high dominant person, each of these 4 factors has an emotion behind it, is actually anger. So if you think about, if you're trying to figure out, who the high dominant people are in your life, think about somebody's anger threshold. And if they lose their temper pretty quickly, but then they get over it and they're fine, they're probably a higher dominant person, because lower dominant people tend to not lose their temper quickly, but they tend to hold on to that grudge or those feelings longer. High dominant people usually, like I call it a flash fire, they get angry and then they're over it. And when it comes to the esteem of high dominant people, they tend to have pretty strong egos. Some might call them arrogant. So you can also, you know, think about people that you know and determine whether that applies to them or not. The second factor is influence. So high influence is how you persuade people to your point of view. And high influential people basically use their personality and their charm and their friendliness to engage people. They're very optimistic, very outgoing, very trusting. I call these the cheerleaders of the world, because they're extroverted, very people-oriented, very friendly. They basically just want to interact and become friends with everyone. On the side of what some of their challenges are, because they're so focused on people, they can be careless with details. They tend to be very trusting and optimistic, sometimes to the point where they can actually be unrealistic. And they tend to be a situational listener. They really love to talk. These are the talkers in the world. And so when I say they're a situational listener, it means they may be quiet for a moment, but they're really just formulating what they're going to say next. So they're not genuinely listening. The emotion behind a high-influence person is optimism. So they tend to look at everything, but, you know, the glass is half full. And their esteem, so to try and recognize people in your life, is usually generally confidence. They usually project themselves in a very self-confident way. Okay, so this S stands for steadiness. Now, this style, steadiness, is the majority of the population. And these are the what I call the nice people in the world. These are the friendly, patient, predictable, hardworking, loyal people. They tend to be very process-oriented. They're very methodical. They don't like a lot of change like the high dominant people do. They prefer the status quo. They actually resist change if they don't think there's a good reason for it. But they're usually very loyal employees, very loyal in relationships. Because they don't like change, they tend to stay in places a long time, you know, in jobs, in relationships, etc. On the downside, though, that can make them slow to change and resistant when they need to change. They tend to avoid controversy. They don't like confrontation, so they tend to not speak up. These are the people that will hold the grudge instead of speaking their mind. And they can be possessive. They can be possessive of information. They cannot tell you what you need to know, mostly because they're, you know, they're security conscious, and they're thinking that, you know, that information is power. So they might not reveal what needs to be revealed. Their emotion is actually non-emotion, so they don't show their emotions. Doesn't mean they don't feel them, they just don't display them. And they tend to be very humble people. And the last factor is compliance, and this is the smallest percentage of the population, 8% of the population, and these are the very accurate, detailed, organized individuals. Very much, the higher their compliance, the more likely they are to be perfectionists. They like things to be very, they're very quality conscious. They want things done the right way. They're very cautious in their work. And to an extreme, that can be that they have too much, you know, perfectionism, and they've actually got analysis paralysis, where they're so into the details and so into making sure things that are right that they're not taking action. They do tend to be defensive if they're criticized. And they can, again, get stuck in the details. And they can be too critical of others because they have such high standards for their work. They can actually criticize others. The emotion behind the compliance style is fear or concern. So they actually fear doing things the wrong way, and they're concerned that, you know, things aren't accurate enough. And then they tend to be modest or insecure when it comes to their esteem. So hopefully from that brief overview, you kind of have the four styles in your mind and can identify some people in your life maybe that are those four styles. So this next piece, information, will make a little bit more sense to you as we go through it. So let's talk about the buying motivation of the four styles. So what's, you know, kind of what's behind their behavioral style that's going to help you figure out, once you recognize that's their style, that's going to help you figure out how to sell to them. Well, the dominant person, like I said, they're very results-oriented. So anything that's going to help them produce a result and do something faster, quicker, better, more efficient, less energy from them, is going to be appealing to them. They're not going to want anything that's going to take a long time to implement. They want to see fast results. They have a strong ego. So, again, anything that can appeal to their ego or boost their ego is going to be appealing to them. They want to win. They're very competitive. They're impatient, and they're opinionated about everything. How about I say that? And so they're going to have opinions about you and your product and your service and preconceived notions about what they should do. And, you know, you're going to have to convince them otherwise if you've got a different idea. But that's what's really behind their motivation, is this strong ego and this desire to win and to be right. Products that appeal to the high dominant person are products that have to do with building their status, big and bold. Like if you go into a high dominant person's office, you can recognize them by things are big, large desks, large furniture, because that they're very power oriented, and that's what appeals to them. And also products that are new and innovative, because they want to win, because they want to be competitive. Things that are new and kind of on the cutting edge are going to appeal to them, because they'll be the first to have something, and that's going to appeal to their ego. These are not the type of people that read an owner's manual. This is something that they're going to see something, they're going to want it, and like I said, it's going to have that emotional trigger that is going to build them up, that it's going to appeal to them. Okay, so buying motivation for high-influence people. Oh, and if I didn't mention it, high-dominant people are 18% of the population. That doesn't mean that you won't be selling to a group of people or an industry that there won't be a higher population of dominant people in that field, but overall, in general, 18% of the population are dominant. 28% of the population are high influence. And high influence people, they want to be liked. They want to be popular. It's all about them. That's one important thing to remember. And I'm a high I, so I can say that. I'm also high dominant, so it's kind of like I know wherefore I speak. They want to look good. It's very important for them to look good. They crave interaction, and they crave the spotlight. So anything that you can do to appeal to those needs of theirs or those desires of theirs to look good, to be in the spotlight, to get that attention, is going to be appealing to them. Products for a high-influence people should be showy, flashy, innovative, anything that's new, cool, or fun is going to appeal to them. So the newest gadgets, the cool colors, I'm convinced that those phones that they make in all those different colors, I think they're doing it for the high eyes because it's not necessary, but you know, I want the hot pink phone. So that'll appeal to them. And what appeals to high-influence people as well, this is a little trick or a little secret that you should know, is testimonials from people they view as important. So if they want to look good, if they want to be popular, what's going to appeal to them is if your product or service has been used by and recommended by people that they would consider also popular or well-liked. So that's a little sidebar. Okay, steadiness, this group is 45% of the population, so again, this is the majority of the population. Their concern or their desire is for safety, security. They're very family-oriented. They like easy methods. They don't want real complicated things. They tend to want assurance about you, about the product or service, and they need closure. So anytime you can appeal to any of those things, safety or security, their family, making something easier for them, giving them closure, meaning selling them A to Z so they don't get left hanging, that's important to them, is going to go a long way. Your products to a high steadiness person, this is the opposite of the other two. They're not going to want cutting edge products, new products. What they're going to be looking for is traditional products, products that have a history of working well in the past. They're going to be looking at consumer reports. They're going to want realistic guarantees. They don't want you to promise them the world. They want a guarantee that you'll stand behind. I always think of like Saturn and Volvo and those types of cars that have really high safety ratings and standards and things like that. That those are the types of things that appeal to high steadiness people. And again, it protects their family, so that's important. As a matter of fact, here I'm going to give you a little note that I didn't think about this when I was preparing this call. One of my clients is Saturn here in Rochester, and they use the DISC assessment to hire their sales consultants. And the benchmark for the job calls for their sales consultants to be high dominant and high influence. They found, you know, that that's what works best in that sales environment. But occasionally, more so than you would think, we will get high steadiness candidates in there. And it's not that they would not automatically hire a high steadiness candidate if everything else about the person checked out. But I saw it often enough that I asked them, why do they think that happens? And what we decided was it's because for high steadiness people, if they're going to be in sales, one, they're going to want to work for a company that they believe in and that they trust. Trust is very important to high steadiness people, although it takes time to earn their trust. But they're also going to want to stand behind a product that they believe in that would be, you know, would protect families and things like that. So I think that's part of why steadiness people have been actually drawn to selling cars at Saturn. So that's interesting. Okay, and last is compliance. So what's the buying motivation behind compliance? Well, compliant people need to know. They need information. They do need to comply. That's important to them. They don't like breaking the rules. They need whatever they buy or are considering buying. They need it to be accurate. They want to succeed by doing things better and by knowing more. So all those things, they're very, like I said, they're very quality conscious. So they're looking to gather information and to know more and then use that information. So their products that appeal to them would be things that are proven, products that are researched, patented. Anytime you have validity studies or case studies, if you're selling a service, let's say, these are the people that are going to ask you for information. They're going to ask you for testimonials. But again, with the high eye, they're not looking for people's popularity necessarily. Now they're going to be looking for people that can give testimonials that what you said your product or service would do actually did. They're going to be that much into the details. And they're typically very into tech gadgets. They tend to like techie things, things that will help them do their job better, know more, et cetera, gather information. That's what's appealing to them. Okay, so next we're going to go on to how and when to close the four styles. And I know I said I wouldn't call it closing. I'd call it opening a relationship. So how or when to open the relationship with the four styles. So let's talk about the dominant first. Just taking a quick break. Well, let me just tell you when to close a high dominant is right away. You do it fast. High dominant people, I've made this mistake where I didn't close them right away or didn't ask for the sale and left their office or hung up the phone, and it can take months to get back into conversation with them. And because they change their mind so quick and because they, you know, take on so many different projects and they want to accomplish so many different things, they lose interest in things really quickly. So if you try and have a 3 or 4 week sales process with a high dominant person, they will lose interest along the way. That has happened to me quite a bit. So what you want to do with a high dominant person is you want to close as quick as possible. So the type of sales presentation that's required is, first and foremost, don't waste their time. Okay, this is the how part. Don't waste their time. The high D buyer doesn't want a lot of facts and figures. So just hit the high points and get to the bottom line. Now, that's going to be particularly challenging if you're a high compliant personality type or if you're selling something that you think requires a lot of information to be given. So what I would recommend in that instance is, then prepare an executive summary of sorts, a one-page, you know, high-level information page that you can give them, but then give them the manual or whatever else that they need that they can drill down into if they want. Basically, the way I prepare a proposal for a high dominant person is I will keep the proposal really short, and it can be for like a long-term project, but the proposal will be no more than 3 or 4 pages. And it's a high level. It's the high level benefits. It may be a few features, but I do not go into detail. And what I'll do is I'll put all the details, all the timelines, all the process for doing everything in appendices in the back and refer to them in the proposal. So if they want more information, it's there for them, but it won't waste their time and it won't lose their interest. How to sell them? You and your product must appear credible. They're very fast to point out inconsistencies or holes or, you know, in your logic, et cetera. So if you appear businesslike and credible, that goes a long way with a high dominant person. They don't want to see a lot of testimonials or research or data. That's not what they need to make a decision. They'll be interested in new products again. And again, don't waste their time. Be concise. Get to your point quickly. Show them that you can solve their problem. And then make the sale. Again, don't let it drag on for a high dominant person. You'll lose them. A couple other things to just take note of, like in a presentation, start with a high dominant person because they're task-oriented, not people-oriented, you want to start with business. You don't want to start with chit-chat. You don't want to look at the pictures on their desk and start asking about their family. You want to, especially if you've been invited in by them, you want to get right down to business. If they want to chit-chat with you, they will do so. And very often, after their desire for a certain result is produced, they actually will then get friendly and talk about personal things. Another note is to concentrate on the immediate sale, not future business. Because you might be thinking down the road, oh, and then we can do this, oh, and then we can do that, and then we can do that. And even though dominant people are future-oriented, you wanna close what you're talking about, that immediate business with them right now. Because if you put too much in front of them, and they say, well, I want time to think about it, you may lose them. So just concentrate on the immediate sale. Ask questions so they can tell you about their operation. It's interesting to me that high dominant people, although they're impatient and although they might tell you they've got 5 minutes, if you let them talk and they're talking about things that are of interest to them, you can have their attention for an hour. So absolutely go ahead and let them talk about their operation or their business, et cetera. Give direct answers to any questions. Don't beat around the bush. High dominant people don't like that. Emphasize results in the bottom line and then ask for their opinion. Here's a couple of hindering factors in selling the high D, being wishy-washy or indecisive in any way, not answering objectives directly, and explaining too many details or rambling. That would definitely, they'd lose focus and get distracted. Okay, I just looked at the clock, and we've gone a little bit longer than I thought, so I'm going to kind of shorten this up a little bit. It's okay, high dominant people are the most difficult to sell to anyway. So we spent the most time on the high dominant. So how and when to sell to the high I? I'm going to answer the when question again first. Quickly, sell the high I, and they may be the fastest sale that you can make because high eyes are very enthusiastic, very optimistic, and they get excited about something, and you want to capitalize on that excitement. And so they may sign very quickly, and that's great. How you want to sell to them, again, spare the details. High eyes typically are not into details. You might offer them to them as a backup, but that's not where you want to base your presentation on. They like, again, new, innovative, and showy products, and they also like to try new things. So if you have an option where you can let them try before they buy, that will go along with a high I. Definitely allow time in your presentation for socializing. High I, they're people-oriented, so these are the people that you can ask about the pictures on their desk or the award behind their, you know, on their wall. The more they feel friendly with you, I believe that everybody buys from people that they like and they trust, but no more so than the high eyes. If they can have a friendly rapport with you, that's going to go a long way with them doing business with you. Feel free to have fun in the presentation with them. Tell stories. They love stories. And it's I didn't talk about this with the dominant people, so but I will. With high eyes, it's okay to touch them. It's okay to, like, you know, pat them on the shoulder or, you know, touch their arm when you're talking to them. But dominant people don't do that. So if you're a high eye and you have a tendency to touch people, you don't want to do that to a high dominant person. It's too close. It's too personal for them. But with high eye people, it's okay to be that comfortable with them. Couple other facts or a couple other tips for your sales presentation. Do use testimonials and drop names if you do know names of people that they might know who've used the product or service. That's important to them. Get to know them. I am a high I, and actually I prefer when somebody who's trying to sell to me understands and knows my business. That makes me feel more important. So take the time, you know, provide the friendly environment, but take the time to get to know them. That's important to them. And then some factors that might hinder you selling a high eye would be, one, if you treated them like everyone else. That's like the biggest mistake I think you could make. They want to be special. We've already talked about they want to be in the spotlight. So if you treat them like everyone else, they don't feel special, and that's not going to help you sell. Don't be pushy. Although high eye people may be socially aggressive, they don't like people being aggressive with them. So don't push for the sale. And the other thing that you can, the other mistake you might make is actually letting them talk so much, because high eyes are the talkers, that you lose control of the conversation. You lose the direction of the conversation, and then they just talk for an hour, and then suddenly the time is up and you have to leave and you haven't accomplished your objective. So that's another thing to watch out for. Okay, how and when to sell to the high steadiness person. Or close the high steadiness person. This is the person who's going to take the most time to sell to. And you want to keep that in mind, and you want to sell to them over time. So take it slow and easy, because if you try and force the sale, if you go too fast, you're going to lose it. Because it takes high steadiness people time to trust. So you have to earn their trust over time. You want to provide plenty of proof and statistics for them. You can talk about their family and their hobbies, but don't go overboard, because if you're inauthentic, high steadiness people are probably the best at picking that up if you're being inauthentic. So when it's appropriate, then, you know, ask them about their family and their life and what's going on. It'll probably require additional visits from you in order to make the sale. So don't have the expectation that you'll close them on the first sale. That is unlikely to happen. Answer all their questions. Be sincere in your approach. They will make an emotional decision if their family is involved or if their values are involved. But typically, they try to remain non-emotional in the sales process. They try to make a logical decision. Don't hard sell them, and give them time to think. High steadiness people need time to process through things, and if you rush them, they get frustrated, and they're more inclined to just say no, not because they don't like your product or you. It's just they need time to think through things, so make sure you give them that time. These are the people who you actually can walk away from a sales visit and come back and pick up where you left off. Not so much with the high dominant person, so close them fast. With a high steadiness person, you could call on them over and over again and still get the sale. As a matter of fact, I'll share a story with you. I have a friend from Paychex who was trying, he sells payroll services, and he was trying to sell to his dry cleaner, a man that he had taken his dry cleaning to for years. And he finally called me up out of frustration one day, and he said, I think this guy's one of those, you call him one of those high steadiness people, and it's driving me crazy. I don't know how to sell him. And my friend had gotten so frustrated that he was actually thinking of not taking his dry cleaning to him anymore. Like, well, if he's not going to do business with me, then I'm not going to do business with him. And so I explained to him about what the high steadiness personality is like. You know, it takes some time. They need to trust. Well, he should trust me. I've been taking my dry cleaning there for 2 years. I said, yeah, but you're actually thinking of taking your dry cleaning somewhere else. I said, let me ask you this. Does he do a good job with your dry cleaning? Yeah. Then you going in there with that attitude, even if you're not saying it, that's your energy. That's how you're feeling about this. high steadiness people are very intuitive. This man is picking up on something, a sense about you, that something's in it for you. He's not trusting you. I said, I think you really need to let it go. I think you need to not have the expectation that just because you bring him your dry cleaning that you're going to get his payroll. Why don't you just use him for his service of dry cleaning and you enjoy him and not worry about it? A week later, I get a phone call from my friend, and he said that that's what he did. He went in there and he said, I'm not even going to ask him about it. I'm just going to let it go, and whatever happens, happens. A week later, he had this dry cleaner's business because he changed how he was approaching the situation. He came across different to this high, and like I said, high steadiness people, they're very intuitive. And this man finally sensed he could trust him, so he tried to close him, I think, for a year and a half, he said. And in one week of changing his demeanor and his attitude about it, he actually got the business from him. So high steadiness people, they definitely need to trust you. Let's see. Hindering factors in selling a high steadiness person is you're going to turn them off if you get too friendly on the first meeting. If you get loud or emotional in the sales presentation, they tend to shut down. They see that salesy, kind of personality. They see it as inauthentic, and they don't trust it. So really be sincere and calm, in your sales presentation. Hard selling is a turnoff for them. Trying to close the deal too fast, trying to push it is not going to get you anything with them. And be careful of not bad-mouthing their current supplier if you know who it is, because with high steadiness people, they're probably friends, or they probably like them, or they just have loyalty to them because they're very loyal people. They might have loyalty to them, and you don't want to, trash somebody else's reputation and then lose the business that way, which is probably a good thing to keep in mind at all times. But okay, so lastly, let's go on to how and when to close the high compliant style. So again, I'll start with the when. When to close them is after the prospect has done research. So they won't be as quick to buy as the dominant and influence styles. They will be a bit faster than the high steadiness person because for them it's not about trust. For them it's about proof. So if you can prove your service or your product through testimonials, through research or data, that will go a long way for a high compliant person. So after they've had a chance to do research on you or your company or whatever it is, that's the time to close them. But they will need a lot of proof, so your sales presentation can have a lot of details. These are the people you can bring the manual to and the facts and the figures, because this is what they want. But again, they're going to need time to digest that. They tend to be suspicious of new products or unproven products. So if you have something new that you're trying to sell them, you're going to have to provide even more research to show that it will work. They're past-based, and they like to know what's worked in the past. So that's what they tend to look for, where they tend to look for reassurance. Don't rush. Again, just like a high steadiness, you don't want to rush them. But you don't want to waste time with small talk either. They're not people-oriented. They're like a dominant person where they're task-oriented. So they stay focused on business and on the task at hand. Make sure that you answer all their questions. Don't leave things undone. If there's something you don't know, absolutely tell them that you'll do the research and you'll get back to them with the answer, because these are the type of people that will remember that you didn't get something to them that they needed. Find ways to minimize risk in your presentation. If you can make a guarantee to them, if they can try before they buy or something like that, that will go a long way to alleviating that fear that they feel about trying something new. Give them a complete proposal. Give them all the information and the facts that you have. Don't overpromise. I think, again, they're going to be sensitive to anything that strikes them as inauthentic, so you want to make sure that you back up what you're saying with guarantees, but don't make these grand promises that you can't stand behind. And more than with anyone else, your sales materials and your sales presentation actually have to be error-free, because high-compliant people, especially the higher they are to that perfectionist level, they will judge you based on the accuracy of your information. So if you come in and you're unprepared and you're disorganized and you've got spelling errors in your proposal, that will actually trip up a high compliant person where the other styles might not notice it. A high compliant person may judge you according to the quality of your materials. Things that might hinder you in selling to a high C or high compliant person, getting too personal about their family without having permission to do that. If you don't know them, you know, stick to business. Touching them or patting them on the back if, again, they're more like high dominant people where that's really off limits, so especially when you first meet them. Again, a loud emotional sales presentation isn't going to appeal to them. They would prefer a more calm, fact-based presentation. And then being shallow with answers to questions. So if they have questions for you and you're wrong in your answer, again, that little trigger is going to go off in their head and they're going to judge that and then possibly judge your entire presentation based on that one question that you answered wrong. So high compliant people, if you're not a high compliant person, salesperson, these are the people that you have to prepare the most for because that, you know, that's what they're looking for, is for you to be prepared and have answers. Okay, so that's how to sell, how and when to close the four styles. Next, I have the number one mistake most salespeople make when on the initial sales call. And the number one mistake I think that most people make, and this is just not even in just sales, but also just in communication, is that we don't read our prospects and then adapt ourselves for what's going to work for them. We all tend to just go around, unless you've had this kind of training before, and we communicate according to what's best for us or how we just typically communicate. If we're an enthusiastic person, we communicate enthusiastically. What we need to do is we need to read that person that we're trying to sell to or we're trying to influence, and we need to just adapt ourselves a bit that it works better for them. The golden rule is do unto others as you would have done unto you. But that doesn't work in communication because everyone is so different. So in communication, we have something that is called the platinum rule, which is do unto others as they would have done unto them. So you actually adapt yourself for a way that's actually going to work better for them. And that's why it's so important to recognize these four different styles that you'll run into and then know how to adapt yourself to have more success. Okay, well, I think we're done on that form. I know we've talked a lot about the style of your prospects and how to adapt yourself for them. We haven't talked much about you, the salesperson, or you, the business owner who has to sell. Because particularly when you're doing sales, you need to start with the right psychological profile rather than just an outgoing personality or a great product. When I, years ago, before I ever thought about owning my own business, people always told me that I'd be great in sales. And the reason they said it is because I had a really outgoing personality. But the truth is I didn't have the right psychological profile when I went into my own business and started selling. Because this psychological profile, it's based on your values, your motivation, and your behaviors. I'm going to ask you three questions, and I want you to think about these three questions. One, are you inherently motivated to sell? Two, do you have the right behaviors to sell? And three, can you recognize yourself and change what isn't working in your sales process? And if you can't answer yes to each of those questions, then you might be losing sales every day.
If you want an easily accessible summary of how to recognize the different DISC styles and what their buying motivations are, turn to the one page on how to recognize your prospect's buying style at the end of this module. We hope you've enjoyed the Income 180 system. If you've worked through each module, you've identified your target market, begun your lead generation, learn the best way to sell your services, and hopefully overcome your fear of making those sales calls. Be sure to contact us for your completion call. We'll assist you in any areas in your business where you need more help. So please call our toll-free number, 888-347-2949, to book your session, or you can always email us at info@myincome180.com. Again, in order to contact us for your completion call, you can call us toll-free at 888-347-2949. or send us an email at info@myincome180.com. Until then, we hope you're enjoying your own Income 180.